From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect.
This is Jim Williams sitting in for Steve Ryman. He'll be back with you again tomorrow. Steve McKee, my good friend and co-founder of McKee Wallwork & Company, is in studio. Steve has written three books, When Growth Stalls, How It Happens, When You're Stuck, and What to Do About It, and Power Branding, Leveraging the Success of the World's Best Brands. His new book is titled Turns, Where Business is Won and Lost. Steve, welcome to ABQ Connect.
Thanks, Jim. Always great to be here.
It's fun to have you. You're a business person, Steve. You have been involved in advertising, marketing, research for how many years?
37 years.
37. And you've but you love it.
I do love it. Yeah. It's a lot of variety.
And one of the things that I've learned about you is that you love data. You love reading history, and all of these things our listeners need to keep in mind, because the topic of your book really has to do with a lot about that. Turns is a business book, but are the concepts you discuss just for business people?
You found me out. It started as a business book being about turnarounds, because that's what my company does. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, you know, that book's been written before. What new can I bring to it? And so I thought, I'm just going to kind of go on a little walk through the wilderness and look at turns in history and science and sports and religion and politics. And I spent about a year doing that. And it became a book that's about business, but business is just a part of life. And so turns in business are part of turns in life. And you can't really separate the two. So yes, it's a business book. It's got real application to business, but it is much more than a business book.
I can't help. I'm going to qualify this question a little bit. I've talked with nutritionists on this program, and you might have somebody that's a food-based nutritionist, and they want you to eat like 18,000 cups of vegetables every day and this much protein, et cetera, et cetera. Jennifer, don't be mad at me. I'm just teasing. But you also talk to people that are supplement-based, and there's a jillion different supplements all of us should be taking, and it's overwhelming because no possible way can you take all of that. So are there so many turns in life that all of this is just so overwhelming none of us are going to be able to comprehend?
You know, I kind of look at it the opposite way. Yes, there are so many turns. I mean, there are more turns in life than you even realize. If you read the first chapter in the introduction, it'll start to blow your mind, as it blew mine, because we're literally turning. Well, the universe is turning every second of every day. Everything in the universe is turning. So we're turning whether we know it or not. But we turn on our heels. We turn our elbows and our shoulders. We turn our necks. I mean, we turn all the time. And yeah, it can be kind of overwhelming. But I think that the takeaway I have of it is it's remarkable, not overwhelming. It's remarkable. And so many of the turns we make, we've been equipped to make without thinking about them, which is also remarkable. So my whole objective with the book was just to hold something up that we take for granted every day and say, let's look at this. Let's examine this beautiful aspect of God's creation, and let's appreciate it. And then let's see what we can learn from it, because there are turns where you really do need to pay attention. And that's the point.
And I think to add context, I need to ask you right off the bat, have you ever been involved with or led a bad turn?
Yes. Many, many times. In fact, I was thinking about talking with my partners about our business. And, you know, we started in 97, and then we had the dot-com bust in 2000, and then we had 9/11 in 2001, and then we had the Great Recession in 2007, and then we had COVID in 2020. It's like you can't buy a break. Those are things that happened to us, though. But I've also made some dumb decisions. Yeah. The beautiful thing is, and this is sort of the point of the book, is you can always initiate a new turn. Mm. Any moment. If you don't like where you're at, turn.
You used a word a minute ago, remarkable. And you've used that before. Like, you love to be outdoors and observe remarkable things about nature in our fair state of New Mexico. Mm-hmm. You observe remarkable things about history and individuals that have done things. Like, you'll talk about some turns, like the Protestant Reformation today, and kind of the criticism and life-threatening kinds of things that faced Martin Luther when he was doing that. But you're a person that is observing, and you find things to be remarkable. This isn't on our list, but I can't help but think that there are people, maybe it's residual of COVID, but they've stopped observing.
Yeah.
They're not reading. They're not getting out in nature. I'm not diminishing anybody because of this. I want you to come out and get back that life and get back that desire to see God's world.
That was part of what motivated me with where the book ended up was as I looked at turns. I mean, you can look at turns in sports, like the U.S. Olympic hockey team victory over the Russians is in there. And that was remarkable in its own way. You know, that was really a cool moment. But then you can, if you look at I started with the physics of turns. So if you look at the universe, literally everything in the universe is turning. And how finely tuned it is by our designer, the one who created it. Mm-hmm. It's remarkable. And you just sit back and you say, how on earth, how in heaven, how in the universe could life even work? And it's awe-inspiring. And the same thing applies to, well, every aspect of life. But if you just look at it through the lens of turns, the grace of a figure skater, you know, carving on the ice. Mm-hmm. And that little piece of steel at the tip of the skate, it's really remarkable.
Well, I can tell you that little piece of steel called the pick at the top of the skate makes me fall on my face every time I go skate.
Yes, and that's a remarkable sight.
Well, getting up is the hard part. That's uh-huh. the funny part. That's yeah. the entertainment. The fall is a little scary, actually. And it hurts now that I'm over 60.
Yes.
More over 60 than I like to admit. But, hey, I have these two questions out of order, so I'm going to ask you my fifth question first. What are the characteristics of turns? Because in a minute we're going to talk about the size of turns, the small turns, the meta turn, you know.
Okay. Can I continue the remarkable theme?
Yes.
As I did the research, again, it took me about a year and I had piles and piles. And I'm, you know, turns in sports, turns in politics, turns in business, turns in history, turns in the physical world. And I thought, what am I going to do with all this? And it occurred to me that they're all the same, which is whether it's a physical turn, a metaphorical turn, a historical turn, there are six things that they all have in common. The book presents eight principles. One's an introductory principle, one's a concluding principle. But it's remarkable how, whether you're looking at a metaphorical turn or a physical turn, they have things in common. And that's what I dove into, and that's how the book is organized, to sort of help you understand how turning a spoon in a cup of coffee is related to the Protestant Reformation.
Wow.
So I promise everybody this when I say this is unlike any other book you've ever read, and you read it.
Yes.
It's very different. It's not what you expect.
And you've really, I think, it's interesting that you said we wrote this book because our whole business is helping people turn a business around that's maybe failing. Mm-hmm. Well, why are you picking hard things to do, Steve? I mean, that's not an easy assignment. And just like I see people in ministry all the time, they don't want to just shake the hands of all the people that are doing good that they see mm-hmm. walk in the church door. They want to be out feeding people. They want to be out providing medical stuff. They want to be in Ukraine in the middle of war. I mean, there's just different people that are there to help people turn it around. You're one of those people.
My daughter and son-in-law, as you know, launched a church. And they prayed about where to launch the church, and they ended up choosing Washington, D.C. Their church is a half a mile from the White House. And I was visiting recently, and I heard somebody asking my son-in-law about why they chose Washington, D.C., and he said, we wanted to go where the need was great. Mm. Now, they picked the right place.
Yeah, the need is great, but you're also going to face some opposition.
But that's where the joy comes from. And so in my business, we go where the need is great. Because when companies are not doing well, people are losing their jobs. It's affecting their relationships. Mm. It's a harmful thing. And if we can help turn them around, the joy is as great as the need if you can make it work.
You've mentioned the Protestant Reformation. I mentioned that. One of the meta turns you carry throughout the book is the Protestant Reformation. Why did you choose that? And narrow that down to how that has to do with stirring a cup of coffee.
Well, the reason I chose it was, one, it fascinated me. One of the things I wanted to do with this book was make it an apologetic. for the faith without being too overt. And so I wanted to have the casual everyday business reader understand something about the Protestant Reformation and therefore how God moves in history and therefore the scriptures. And I thought that was a good way of doing it. I also was just fascinated by the fact that on October 31st, 1517, a monk nailed 95 theses to a door in Germany. So a single person did a single act on a real day in history, and it changed everything. You and I wouldn't be sitting here. There would be no America. I mean, if you think about it, without the Protestant Reformation, there's no pilgrims, there's no Mayflower, there's no America, at least the way we know it. And we wouldn't be here because our parents or grandparents or great-grandparents or whomever would never have met. And so you think, because of what one man did on one day in history, the whole world changed. I thought the Reformation, that's true in a lot of ways, but I thought the Reformation really told that story well. And how it relates to turning your spoon in a cup of coffee? You're changing something. You're changing something. He nailed 95 theses to the door. You turn your spoon in a cup of coffee because you put in some sweetener or some cream or something. You're changing something, and that something is affecting how your body is composed, your body composition, and it might affect how you drive your car or react to someone later in the day, and it might change history. It's pretty remarkable how so many little things that we take for granted are not little things.
A turn, one of the characteristics of the turns that you described is actually changing direction.
By definition.
But I'm wondering, I know there's a lot of people that spin around in circles,
yeah,
and they don't actually ever go in a different direction.
Not intentionally. They do, because once you've spun around, technically you're in a different place.
Wow.
Yeah, because that gets into the physics of turns.
Okay.
If you spin around, so it's 360 degrees in a circle, right? If you spin around 359 degrees or 361 degrees, you are in a different place.
Yeah.
And even if you spin around 360 degrees, time has passed, and so you're in a different place. If you want to get all metaphysical about it, it gets pretty weird.
Are turns different? I don't have this on the list either, but are turns different based on the geography? Like, I can't help but think about the Manana state. Turns take longer here than they might take in somewhere another.
Depending upon the turn, yeah. And there are advantages and disadvantages to that. There are, we've talked about that before, you know, the Manana, there's something about the lifestyle here that we just love, but there's something about the urgency here and the economy here that is hurt by that. And I don't know if I could say what, you know, how they weigh in the balance.
Well, in all your books, it seems like you ask your readers to observe what's happening today in light of what's been historical. But I'm nervous about how I ask this question because you have you quote Professor Derek Frisbee, who apparently is a war historian at Middle Tennessee State, and he says history is memory and memories change. And I can't help but think about revisionist historians and people that are changing things with an intent, not the memories changing because they're remembering differently or remembering more, but how important is it for us to get history right in order to make the correct turns moving forward?
We need to get it as right as we possibly can. Professor Frisbee's point there was, he was saying that there's been a book written about the Civil War once a week, you know, for the last 100 years. Mm-hmm. And there are different perspectives on the war. As we learn more information, get more perspective. That event happened in real time, and it is true. What happened during the Civil War is true. We will never fully know that truth because we can't, because we're distant. And that's, I think that's true of any historical event. The danger that we're facing now in our culture is that people are intentionally trying to revise history. That's the Marxist strategy. And that's very, very, very problematic. Even those of us who try to be as faithful as possible. You know, people ask me how my company started. I tell them the story, but I'm sure I forgot plenty of it.
Yeah.
And I might have embellish something in my own mind over the years. You know, we're not perfect, but intentionally doing it is very scary.
We're going to talk a little bit more about this. We're going to take a quick break. We're with Steve McKee. He has a brand new book called Turns, Where Business is Won and Lost. We'll be right back with Steve McKee. Stay with us on ABQ Connect.
You're listening to KLYT. Welcome back to ABQ Connect.
We're back with Steve McKee. He's the co-founder of McKee Wallwork and Company. I trust McKee Wallwork and Company is doing well, Steve?
Doing well, yes. Thank you.
You have a new president?
Mm-hmm. It's not me.
Yeah. And your old partner's still with you?
Yeah. We're doing great. Pat Wallwork and I are doing wonderfully. And we brought three younger partners on who are running circles around us. And we love it.
You know, you've developed a lot of people, though, too. I know that two of my daughters interned with you when they were in high school and just had a fabulous experience. So.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, and you made it fun, but I hope they worked hard.
Well, yes, they did.
I listen to what I call clean comedy, and one of the guys that I like is Jim Gaffigan. Uh-huh. And he starts his shows very often by saying, oh, thank you for having me here tonight. I have... three great children. Of course, everybody starts clapping. And then he goes, one, and I also have one other. So I never tell my kids who the one other is.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So I keep them.
Well, I have some fun with that too.
You have some fun with that. Yeah. Hey, I wanted to tell you a story because we're talking about history. We're talking about how important it is to get history right in order to kind of be a predictor for the turns you need to make, or at least be able to evaluate current circumstances in light of the past. So I'm an American. You're an American. I feel like I can say this. A lot of Americans bug me because they're not thankful for anything. I mean, many of them are not. I know many are as well. So I don't want to criticize those. But there's a barbershop, and I'm not going to name it. But there are, interestingly, four Iranian men and I believe one Iraqi man. And typically the Iranians and the Iraqis don't play well together. As churches don't play well together, as Celtics and Lakers fans, you know, there's things about that, and we probably could turn that into a turn, right? Mm-hmm. But I talked to these gentlemen. I was getting a haircut. My oldest son lives out in San Diego, and I was visiting my granddaughter, and he goes to this barbershop, and I'm sitting in the owner's chair, and these guys are just full of energy. They've immigrated to this country. They're having wild success. They do such a great job. And in the midst of that, I asked this question. I said, do you find Americans appreciate America? And I'm not exaggerating, man. They all put down the clippers. All five of them came over and stood around my chair. And I'm thinking, oh, am I about to get mugged? And one of them just very seriously. I mean, we were joking around and laughing. And then all of a sudden, it got really serious. And they said, we need to tell you something. They said, Americans don't appreciate what they have in this country. If they lived 1 minute in a socialist dictatorship or anything like that, like we have, they would be absolutely amazed at this country, even today, and they would stop complaining. So I thought I'd share that story.
Yeah, I was in Miami this week, and a lot of Cuban refugees are there. They feel the same way. They have a love for the country because they understand what they came from. And what it could be. I think we're just so far from it. We take it for granted.
How do you evaluate the environment and context in which you are operating? Like, for example, turning a boat. So if you're in the water, the environment you're in is there's waves, there's wind, there's where are you? You have to be navigating correctly because you don't have any landmarks. I mean, all of that kind of determines which way you turn. So if you can use that metaphor for where we're standing today, where mm-hmm. you are, if you run a large advertising agency, what do you do if you're running a big church? What do you do if you're just a citizen trying to evaluate who to vote for?
Yeah, it's another one of those remarkable things. If you're in a sailboat and you're new, you're going to be in the water.
Yes,
because you don't appreciate the forces. Mm-hmm. And so I think of my little granddaughter here in town who is walking. But not as well as I'm walking. Mm-hmm. You know, she's 2 years old.
She's probably walking as well as I am.
She probably is. But she, when she stands up and begins to walk, is taking in, through her remarkable senses that God has given her, taking in all the available data and processing it. It's not conscious, but it's deliberate. Whereas you and I get up and we walk and we don't process it because our senses have been so trained to take in the right information. And that's the thing about a turn. I like to use the analogy of when you learn to drive a car. You know, I stole my dad's car before I had my driver's license one day and went out for a joyride, I'm ashamed to say. And I was terrified. My shoulders hurt. My hands were wrapped around the wheel so tight. And I was trying to keep it between the lines because I'd never driven a car. And so I was trying to, well, today, I don't even think about it, right? Mm-hmm. Driving a car is second nature. And that's a good thing, but it's also a bad thing because if you think every turn is second nature, you're not going to pay attention to. There are times in a car where you really do need to pay attention. And if you don't pay attention quickly enough, you're going to get in an accident.
Yes.
And that's true in business. It's true in life. We take our relationships for granted. We take it all for granted. But if you recognize that a turn is happening, like when we had our first child, if you haven't had a child and you're about to have a child, your life is about to change. Mm-hmm. And your relationship with your spouse is about to change. And those are things that, you know, you want to take note of and be prepared for. And anything that could be construed as a turn in life, the principles in the book apply to.
You know, I want people to understand a little more context because I think this would help people. You've been married to Denise how many years?
37 years.
Okay. Awesome. Congratulations. I am unfortunately divorced after 26. But I remember turns when we had kids. And I observe the McKees doing things differently than I did with my ex-wife. Let me give you an example. So when you're first with Denise, I mean, you guys were in the singles group at Calvary. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where you met, but I observed you guys and you started dating and you did fun things and you had dates and you had different things. And then Delaney's born. And that's a turn.
Mm-hmm.
And the McKees, at least it would be my observation, did some things to make sure that you were still dating and you were still involved in your kinship. At the time, kinship groups and all of those people are fabulous and you're still involved with all of them. How many years with that kinship group?
36.
So, and that's what people don't understand about church. That's church.
That's church.
That's church for the McKees. That's anything going on. Those people are there for you and they advocate for you and they might kick your butt too, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, and that's their role, and that's the role you've said, I want
you. They have permission to do
that. You have permission. So I didn't do those things. So that was a turn that I didn't make. I think I was a good dad, and I did a lot of good things with my kids, but I didn't make the turn to do things correctly. And so what should our listeners do with that information?
Pay attention. Pay attention that there are so many things, again, that just happen naturally, but if you're paying attention to what is happening, you might find yourself beginning or in the midst of an unpleasant turn. And the hope of the book, the promise of the book is, as I said, if we don't like the way things are headed, we can always, always, always initiate a new turn. We can't control our turns, that there's just too much going on. But we can always initiate a new turn. And so if you don't like where you are in your job, in your marriage, in your life, initiate a new change something. That's the beauty of it.
When you're thinking about that, how much does disorientation or fear dictate your unwillingness to make a turn?
A lot. Maybe more than disorientation, denial or just a refusal to see what's going on. Fear is certainly a part of it.
I can't help but ask you politically. It seems like in the state of New Mexico, people are not voting. And it seems like it's what you just said. It's like denial.
They're not appreciating the slow turn that we're in, that the principalities and powers working through people are taking the state. And I think the turn is so slow, intentionally so, that we don't appreciate it. And so when
it's almost camouflage.
Yeah. When it's election day and I'm kind of tired, I'm kind of busy, you know, we don't vote. And that, of course, we've had many conversations about getting people to do that. The dangerous thing about turns is if you're, it's the frog in the pot, right? If you're unaware of them, you could be in a world of hurt really quickly. And yes, that's where we're headed as a culture broadly. New Mexico, unfortunately, is in many ways leading the way, you know, in the nation for that cultural decline.
I can't help but bring this up because I think you'll remember it. When I was coaching, I spent most of my time trying to teach kids how to play basketball without fear.
Hmm.
And the fear that they had overwhelmingly was body contact. So if I took Riley McKee and had Jimmy Williams guarding him, and I said, Riley, I want you to go from the top of the key, and I want you to drive in for a right-handed layup. He would run all the way outside of the lane in a, I call a banana cut, you know, kind of a wide turn, and he would shoot the ball 10 feet away from the basket because he didn't want to make contact. And then I'd switch it around, and Jimmy would do the same thing. So we did drill after drill after drill on body contact.
Initiate
the contact. So I wanted your left shoulder to hit the defender's left shoulder, and I wanted you to make as straight a line to the basket as possible, because as soon as the defender moves, you can make body contact without it being a charge. Now, if you go right through the center of their body, that's a charge. Mm. But if you hit your shoulder on their shoulder and you drive them in a straight line toward the basket, they can't do anything. They're helpless. That's the way basketball works. And I will tell you that when I graduated from El Dorado High School in 1976 and I went and played basketball at the University of New Mexico, that is 90% of what we worked on every single day, because I was terrified of body contact. I scored a lot of points in high school. I was tall. I, you know, could shoot and do all those different things, but I didn't want body contact. And it helped me so much. My idea was, okay, I want to take 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, and get them so they're not afraid. Mm.
So the one way to explain that was, instead of them taking the turn, you wanted to make them make the other guy turn.
Yeah.
Because if the other guy's turning and moving, you have the advantage in basketball.
I love that.
It's funny because you, your influence coaching my kids, I wrote about the transition game in basketball because I was thinking of you as I did it, because you taught me about the transition game. When the ball comes off the rim, you don't rebound it and say, what do I do now?
Right.
You're ready to go. And there's principles that you follow.
Yeah. Outlet pass, get the ball to the middle, guys fill the lane. There's all kinds of simultaneous motion involved.
And that's another metaphor for business. There's just so much to learn from all the different turns in life. Mm.
What turn was most influential? I know you have a little history with how you started your business and things you couldn't control, but if there was one single turn in your life that changed everything, what was that?
Well, professionally, obviously marrying my wife was the best turn.
Oh, so you don't have to sleep on the couch. Way to go, Steve.
Professionally, it was one of the first things I did. And this story's in the book. I was working at a health club looking for my first professional job, and I saw a want ad in the newspaper. Listeners can Google that if they're below 40. They don't know what that is. And I applied for it. It was for a field marketing manager job on the Pizza Hut account. And the woman called me to interview me at around noon, and I was sleeping because I opened the club at dawn, and I went home and took a nap after I got off. Interview did not go well. Denise, we were freshly married. She said, why don't you write her a letter? Again, I wrote a letter explaining to her what happened, asked for a second chance. Long story short, I wrote the letter. I put as much thought into it as I could. She gave me a second chance. I got the job. And then I later met the president of the company, who said the letter ended up on his desk. And he told me, I'm a wet behind the ears 22-year-old. He said, this is the best letter I've ever read, which taught me the power of the printed word, which gave me a love for writing, which ultimately led me to write articles and then books. And then do a bunch of research on this crazy thing called turns and write this book. And I'm sitting with you here today because of that one event.
You're mentioning something really simple. And I know you know all about marketing on handheld devices and social media and all of this kind of stuff. But the printed word still has a major influence. Writing somebody a card.
Oh, yeah.
That still really touches them.
Even more so now today.
Yeah.
Because all they're getting from other people is texts.
So I'm thinking, I just want to throw this in as a sideline. If you might be down and you're not high energy and different stuff, think about how you could bless somebody else.
Totally.
Write them a letter.
Turn their day around.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen. We've got more coming up with Steve McKee. We're talking about his brand new book. It's called Turns, Where Business is Won and Lost. And just amazing application to all of us. And if you're a business person, hoping you're getting a lot out of this as well. We'll be back with Steve McKee right after these messages.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect.
Jim Williams in for Steve Ryman this afternoon. Thank you for joining us on ABQ Connect. I'm here with Steve McKee. Steve is the co-founder of McKee Wallwork. 37 years?
Well, the company is 27 years.
But you've been in the industry.
I've been in the industry for 37 years.
27 years. And you've been married for?
37 years. I got my first job 6 weeks after we got married.
And how many grandchildren?
Seven.
Isn't that interesting how that all comes up? I mean, our kids and families grew up and we have grandchildren and everything. I don't get to see you real frequently, maybe 2-3 times a year, but it's always a blessing. I do want to tell you something, and this is really a thank you. I've been in the pulpit at Calvary a couple times, and both times you took the time to write me a letter and say thanks.
Well, it was sincere.
It was really encouraging, trust me, because all you think about when you're in the pulpit, or I don't know if you do this, but I actually have a time of, I guess I'd call it depression.
Yeah.
Like, man, did I blow it?
I actually did blow it. I was in Miami this week giving a speech, and I actually did blow it.
Did you?
It did not go well. But there's nothing wrong with a little humility. That's what I always tell myself.
There you go. Hey, talk to us about the principles of a turn.
There are many. One of the ones that's early in the book is called The Principle of the Object. I thought it was sort of a setup, because the whole idea is if everything is turning, therefore every turn requires a thing. And it's like, well, that's kind of obvious. In other words, there's no such thing as an orbit without a planet. Mm-hmm. An axle is only an axle when there's a wheel on it, mm-hmm. that sort of a thing. And the idea is just to kind of set up that things turn and how important it is for us to separate that which is turning from the turn itself. So, for example, we call a turn in the road a turn, but it's not a turn. It's just asphalt. What makes it a turn is when a car turns.
Yes.
And I know this sounds kind of crazy. In business, I found, and this is true in life in general, if you can separate yourself from the turn, you can think objectively about it. So my speech did not go well this week. That's on me. But there were reasons beyond me why it didn't go well. Not entirely, but there were. And so by separating it, myself from that, I'm not laying awake at night worrying about it, right? It happened. Mm-hmm. And there's a line I put in the book that more than one person has said, this is it. And it's simply not my fault, is my problem. The whole idea that we don't screw up very often, none of us do. We do occasionally, and we have to take our medicine when we do. But we're dealing with problems every day.
Yes.
The vast majority of the problems we deal with are not our fault. So if you just separate yourself from that, say, it's not my fault, so I'm not going to have a bunch of angst about it. But it is my problem because it's in my lap. Well, who better to solve it but me? And now you get all the positive juice going instead of the negative juice. That's the principle of the object, is separate that which is turning from the turn itself.
What's the principle of the moment?
Love that. Every turn has its time. A moment is actually a term from physics, believe it or not, that when something is turning, it creates a moment. It's a scientific turn, but it's also a scientific term. It also refers to, of course, time. And that was one of the fascinating things, like the Protestant Reformation. What was the moment of the Protestant Reformation? Was it October 31st, 1517, that day? Was it the first 7 years when things were pretty intense? Was it from the martyrdom of Jan Hus, which was 100 years before Luther, to the Enlightenment? Or was it from the beginning of time until now? If you look at one of the points I make is you can look at a turn through a microscope or a telescope, and it'll teach you different things. So thinking about the principle of the moment, why, you know, how long did it take me to write this book? Well, 90 days or 37 years. Just depends on, you know, how you look at it.
But you also did a bunch of research specific to the book.
So I could have said 90 days. I could have said 2 years. I could have said a lifetime.
Were there turns that you made during the writing of the book?
Like rewriting it 3 times?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that because you're your own worst critic or because people gave you input?
No, it's because it's so very different. It was very esoteric. It still is. It was very esoteric. And I had a couple of early reviewers who loved me say, what are you talking about here?
What are you talking about?
So I had to bring it a little bit more down to earth.
Principle of the contest.
Oh, yes. Every turn is a contest of competing forces, and you are one of them. If you look at turns in the physical world, you have, well, inertia, which is the tendency of a body in motion to continue in motion. You have momentum, which always has to slow entering a turn. But if you slow it too much, it's a problem. You have leverage. As you're going around a turn, just like a crowbar provides leverage to pull out a nail, a turn is about, there's an apex of a turn and there's leverage in a turn. These are all metaphors, as you can't mm-hmm. tell. You have torque, which is the ability of, it's basically leverage in a circle, the ability of something, of a screwdriver to turn a screw. You have lean. If you're on a motorcycle and you turn and you don't lean, you're not going to be on the motorcycle. So every turn, and those are just some of them, every turn has all these forces in the physical world. Well, there's an analogy to that in every turn in life, too, that there's friction is another one, momentum, torque, lean. And I tell my business audience, as I say, whatever turn you're considering right now, go to the whiteboard, write these forces down and analogize them. What's the friction we're experiencing right now? What's it doing to our momentum? How can we gain more torque, you know, through the turn? What leverage can it provide us? And I just think that's a really helpful tool to use to evaluate a turn that you're going through. It's just another way of looking at it.
So when you're talking to a client, are you telling them you're in the middle of a turn or you made this turn? And
almost by definition, turns are happening all the time. When we work with struggling companies in particular, they're either in the midst of a negative turn or they're trying to make a positive turn. And we talk in that context. And using analogies from the physical world is just a helpful way of looking at it.
I don't know if this is a generational thing, but consequences seem to be more impactful to people today. And there's a principle of a turn, the principle of consequences.
Yeah. Any turn is going to have consequences. We've talked about this before, far beyond the immediate consequences. So if you're turning over in bed and not voting on election day, there are serious long-term consequences to that. And that's we I've tried to get people to appreciate that. Always joke that if you're a young kid and you're listening to Free Bird in the car, I'm dating myself,
yes,
and you're jamming to it, that's fine. But if you take your eyes off the road because you're too into the music and you crack up your dad's car, that's going to have consequences. I mean, it could have life-changing consequences. Mm-hmm. So we need to think, as we consider a turn, what am I going to say in this relationship at the moment? That's going to have immediate consequences, but it's also going to have long-term consequences.
Principle around us all.
That's where I underscore that turns are around us all the time. And if we are pay attention to them, we have agency. We can initiate a new turn. I talk in the book about the prefix re, like renewal and regeneration. And it's all related to turn. And I talk about repentance. Mm. That what is repentance? It is to turn from your sinful ways, turn to God, and seek forgiveness and walk in the Lord's ways. And so even the Christian walk can be described in terms of turns.
Principle of the cause.
The principle of the cause is that every turn has a cause. That's the principle of cause and effect is a philosophical principle. That every effect has a cause and every cause has an effect. So when there's a turn happening, something caused it, might help you to try and figure out what that is. And as I said, you can be the cause. If you want a different effect, then you can be the cause of that different effect. Yeah. It's empowering. I find it very empowering.
Yeah. You know, there's interesting things that you're talking about. I've just been with my dad now for 19 months. He passed away May 1st. And I was already close to my dad, and I really got close to him, being a caregiver for him. And I noticed that his generation is really referred to as the Great Generation, fighting multiple wars, keeping our country safe, really being the foundation of voting and activism. And they've, been through all kinds of stuff that our generation, they've actually done stuff that's protected us from having to go mm-hmm. through that ourselves. But in talking with him, he emphasized to me many times, and he had some dementia. So this would come to his heart frequently. We'd have kind of the same conversation that he couldn't remember, but he would tell me frequently, I believe Jesus is the Lord and Savior of the world. And I said, that's awesome, Dad. I really appreciate that. But one day I thought about, Dad, I need to ask you a question. I said, have you ever received the forgiveness that Jesus offers us by his death on the cross? And he said to me, what do you mean? Mm. And I said, well, have you done bad things? He goes, oh, yeah. He says, in fact, I'm not sure whether God will let me into heaven. And I said, well, Dad, you've already said to me that you believe Jesus is Lord and Savior. So do you realize that the only thing you have to do, despite whatever you've done in the past, is to say, Lord, please forgive me for my sins. I receive your forgiveness and I love you. And he did that with me 10 times over a period of almost 2 years. And it was one of those things where it blessed my heart every time, but he didn't have a memory of it. But I could see the Holy Spirit was talking to him.
Yep.
And for me, that was a big turn.
Big turn. Big that turn. You get to relish for the rest of your life.
Yeah, and it was extra special. I share these things because I've already talked about failed marriage, but I've got so many other failings.
As do we all.
and people don't realize that our failings actually become God's strength. They're not the object of ridicule. Whenever I've shared something that I've done bad and I've actually shown that there's some repentance and God's dealt with me in this way, it blesses people rather than bringing shame upon me.
I had a realization recently that if you're trying to climb the pinnacles of pride, you get up to a certain plateau and it's you can easily fall off. But if you lower yourself to the floor of humility, there's lots of room to move around. Yeah. You don't have to worry about falling.
Yeah.
If you just hang out with the humble.
Amen to that. What do we do when unexpected turns come in our lives?
We focus. We go to the driving analogy. You're in a car. You're cruising down the road. Here comes a hairpin turn. It gets your attention. You focus. You tighten up on the steering wheel. Go to 10 and 2, right? Turn the radio down, whatever. Tell the kids to be quiet. And you focus your way through it. It's a snowy, icy morning, and I make a right turn on my normal commute to work, and my car fishtails a little bit. Mm. My mind says, okay, no more subconscious driving. Today we're going to consciously drive. And so when the unexpected happens, your senses become alert. You remember all the principles that you know, in this case of driving, and you focus your way through it. Again, you can't control all the circumstances. I can't control the ice, but I can certainly increase the odds that I'm going to get to work safely.
In a few minutes, we're going to be done with the interview. People are going to go away and say, wow, that was a really great thing that Steve talked about. I really enjoyed that. But I want them to be able to say, this is what I'm going to do with it. So I can't help but go back to our second question. Are there just too many turns that this information is overwhelming?
It could drive you crazy. And that drove me crazy a little bit. But no, they're not. Because the way that God has ordered things, the way that we've been created, is most of the turns in life we can do subconsciously. I think what I'm trying to do with this book is, one, alert us to the fact that when we know we're going through a turn that we need to pay attention to, we should pay attention to it. And two, give people a lexicon and some terminology and some tips for how to navigate a turn better. So the vast majority of turns in life, when you're turning the spoon in your cup, I wouldn't like think about, although if you want to look at it and watch the little whirlpool, it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go crazy, but pay attention to the signals that you're getting. If a relationship is going poorly, if a business deal is going badly, if your health is, going downhill, that's a turn and you don't have to be a victim of it. You can be an agent in it.
Would you mind mentioning some of the notable names in your book? You're not name dropping, but I find some of the people you referred to as examples. You didn't pick these people because of their religious beliefs or because of one thing or another. I think a lot of them were excellent in their area of endeavor, and they made some very impactful decisions in their life. So go over some of them.
Well, Muhammad Ali is in there. Benedict Arnold is in the book. I spend a fair amount of time with giants in science like Francis Bacon and Newton and Adam Smith in economics. But Walter Cronkite, Celine Dion, Albert Einstein, Margaret Thatcher.
Was there something different about Walter Cronkite? You're younger than me, but I used to watch Walter Cronkite. I used to love when there was a rocket being shot off at Cape Canaveral. It was all Walter Cronkite, and his cadence and everything was so memorable. Did they do news differently then than they do it now?
They did. But it wasn't so much the glory days. It was fairly, Walter Cronkite was not as objective as he came across. Let me just put it that way. But he's in the book because one evening in the 1960s, he said that the Vietnam War was not going to be won. And because Walter Cronkite said that, Lyndon Johnson said, if I've lost Walter Cronkite, I've lost the nation and I'm not going to run for president again. So again, what one man said on one newscast on one night in the mid-1960s changed the course of American and, frankly, world history.
Right.
That's what's so remarkable. Sorry to keep using the word.
Well, you
about turns.
You mentioned Muhammad Ali, and I loved watching Muhammad Ali more for his entertainment value. So he used to tell everybody he was the greatest, this and that. I just watched a little clip on Prime with Billy Crystal. Billy Crystal does... Mm-hmm. A lifespan, it's a comedy routine about Muhammad Ali. And one section of it where Muhammad Ali was incarcerated for refusing to be drafted into the United States military. You know, he received tremendous ridicule. I mean, he was stripped of his world titles and he stood the course. And he came back and became the heavyweight champion and he became beloved by a lot of Americans. That was a long turn, Steve. Very painful turn for him.
It was. He stuck by his convictions. He was the first athlete to go from the sports pages to the front pages. And now we see that a lot. But that was one of the contributions, the turns that he's responsible for, is he was so braggadocious and bold and then refusing to be drafted. He was just a boxer. But now he was on the front pages and he changed the celebrity aspect of sport forever.
Yes. And you know, the whole aspect of activism was, I guess, kind of born at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really was. And we're seeing the fruit of that.
Now, I shouldn't discount Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. because he was actually active before that.
But not as an athlete.
Yeah, not as an athlete. Right. That's right.
That's what really changed.
Yeah, that's what really changed. Steve, what do you hope people take away? What do you want them to go talk about for the next hour after they listen to you today?
I want them to not run into a pole observing all the turns around them. But I think to reflect on turns, whether it's, you know, tracing the arc of the moon across the sky and how marvelous that is, or the rings in a tree and what that, you know, signifies. I mean, I don't want to get all poetic on you, but even a relationship that you value. I challenged some people this week. I said, if I was to ask you about a major turning point or two in your life, it probably wouldn't take too much thought for you to think of one. And that's fine. I said, but what if you think about something that you really, really value and trace your steps back to see how it came about? I suspect there's a turn in there that at the time you had no idea was going to be the consequential.
Yes.
And I just think if people have an appreciation for the providence of God in how he set up the universe, how the sun rises and sets every day, and how he has guided our lives, I think that's a wonderful thing.
Always blessed to have you, my friend.
Likewise.
Steve McKee's new book is called Turns, Where Business is Won and Lost. It's available on Amazon and other places online. So, Steve, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.